Hello and welcome to the latest edition of China Inc. by Bamboo Works, where we discuss the latest business and financial news from China and what it all means. I'm Doug Young, Bamboo Works Editor-in-Chief, and I'm joined today by Renee Vangasteen, one of our founding partners, who's also a longtime China watcher and former investment banker. Today we'll look at a China downgrade by global ratings agency Fitch. We'll also look at China's latest move to try and lure back more foreign tourists. We'll start with the ratings downgrade by Fitch, which was one of the top financial stories last week. It's rather straightforward, with Fitch lowering its outlook on China's sovereign rating to negative, citing risks to public finances created by economic uncertainty. The move comes 4 months after Moody's made a similar ratings downgrade in December. So, Renee, what's the broader significance of this move, both in terms of the attraction of Chinese debt and also more generally for anyone interested in investing or doing business in China?
Let's first of all focus on the fact that, as you say, this is downgrading the outlook,
right?
Not the actual credit rating. And this is similar to what Moody's did back in December. It's primarily based on the fact that the Chinese economy is relatively weak, or at least weaker than people expected at this stage. The real estate sector problems continue. They don't seem to have a solution, you know, anytime soon. Last week, there were articles again about some developers trying to fend off requests by creditors to basically force liquidation of some assets to repay debt.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those actually involved one of the top three, four Chinese banks, which is government-owned. So that doesn't look too good. But all of that is focusing people on the size of the debt in China. China has a lot of debt at the various levels of the country, central, provincial, local, and so on,
right,
with a fair amount of lack of clarity as long as exactly how big these things are. The real estate sector weakness obviously continues to play negatively to the ability of local governments, provincial governments to, you know, get the revenues from sales of lands for new project developments and so on. So I think that's what Fitch and earlier Moody's were focusing on. Their responsibility as rating agencies is obviously to, you know, alert investors of potential risks. And that's basically what they've been doing. Now, China itself doesn't have a lot of borrowings in foreign currencies, offshore borrowings. So this, at least for now, will have practically no impact at all on the country's ability to continue to fund itself and without a major negative impact on interest rates at which they can raise money. Same thing for not just the country, but, you know, SOEs in China and so on, which are a big part of the economy. So impact should be minimal for now. Everybody continues to focus on whether the economy is going to continue to rebound, and more importantly, whether consumers are going to start playing a more active role in spending and therefore supporting the economy. And I would expect that there will be no further moves for now on credit rating downgrades, as the agencies and everybody else who invest in China is watching what's going to happen in Q2 primarily. GDP for Q1 seems to have been relatively strong. However, exports in March decreased much more than expected. So we're in this, you know, continuing environment with China where you get good news, then you get not so good news and so on.
Right.
And it's not easy for people to try and figure out if it's finally going to take off or not.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, well, like you were pointing out before, this is just a downgrade on the outlook. You seem to think that there's not going to be any actual ratings downgrade. Also, S&P hasn't downgraded their outlook yet. So, I mean, do you see more downgrades coming, I guess? And again, if that happens, are there really any implications? Like you say, most of the Chinese debt, I guess, is held by big domestic investors who don't necessarily invest, I guess, based on commercial factors, have other motivations. I mean, are all these downgrades, A, I guess, one, are there going to be more? And B, does it really matter?
Well, I mean, what's going to happen next is pretty much everybody's guess at this moment. Just go back to December when Moody's downgraded the outlook. We are 4 months later, and it's pretty much status quo as far as they are concerned. It's all going to depend, I think, a lot on what happens to the Chinese economy in the months ahead. I mean, an actual downgrade is a pretty big move, and I'm sure that both rating agencies are going to handle that extremely carefully.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, once again, let's see what happens on the economic front in the coming months. Impact Chinese debt is going to be, as I said earlier, relatively small, if any. The only ones who might, especially if you had an actual downgrade, have to pay more for debt would be very likely private companies that may not be able to borrow as much as they need domestically from the banks or from the domestic market,
mm-hmm.
especially if that is domestic market is focused primarily on funding the governments and the SOE. But that's still, I think, you know, not a large number of companies. Historically, there was a lot of offshore borrowing, but primarily and to the largest extent, I think, by the real estate developer.
Right.
And there's no way that these guys can raise money offshore again for quite a long time.
I don't think they'll be coming back to foreign lenders anytime soon, and foreign lenders won't give them anything if they do.
Right.
All right, well, next, let's move on to our second story, which is China's latest steps to lure back foreign tourists, which seem to be going into overdrive lately. The latest step, the Culture Ministry and Central Bank have jointly issued an order telling all hotels with ratings of 3 stars or higher to accept foreign credit cards. And they've also told all major tourist attractions to accept credit cards or cash as well. So international tourism to China basically stopped during the pandemic, even as more Chinese stopped using cash and now pay for almost everything using domestic apps from WeChat and Alipay. That's scared off a lot of foreigners from returning now that the pandemic is over, since they can't use the cash and credit cards they typically use to pay for things in China. Do you think all these latest steps are going to do anything to convince more foreign tourists to return to China?
Well, some will, I think. I think it's going to be quite a while before we go back to the pre-COVID numbers. Part of it is geopolitics. Part of it is there are fewer flights between China and the rest of the world, at least Europe and North America, compared to before COVID. And there's some issues there also with the recent effort by the airlines industry in the U.S. to actually ask Biden to limit the number of flights between China and the U.S. because they consider that Chinese airlines are competing unfairly. So this obviously is going to continue to play for a while. The geopolitics and then the number of flights. It is not impossible to function in China as a foreigner without using actually physically your existing credit card. I mean, I am using WeChat Pay, for instance, constantly when I'm in China to pay for just about everything, including coffee at Starbucks and Didi rides and all of that. And it is actually tied to my Hong Kong credit card, and it works beautifully. So there are ways around that today, but it's you have to know about it. You have to be familiar with the apps and so on. So it makes sense, I think, for the country to, or the government to, you know, push vendors to accept foreign credit cards. Now, one of the reasons why, even before the pandemic, the lots of smaller businesses had problems accepting foreign credit cards, largely because of the amount of fees that they had to pay compared to people using domestic credit cards. Mm-hmm. That obviously is not going to go away. So I'm not too sure, you know, how you can achieve that. If you're a small business, say a restaurant, shop or something like that, are you going to ask foreigners to pay extra compared to domestic consumers because the shop has to pay 2%, 2.5%, 3%, whatever, MasterCard and Visa and so on?
Right.
But it certainly makes sense from the government standpoint. And this is, you know, this is what happens when you isolate yourself from the entire world and you start believing that, you know, you can function perfectly well without any outside interference.
Yeah.
So it's going to take time.
Okay. Well, yeah, I wanted to ask sort of this isolation issue. I mean, China wasn't that unique. You know, they didn't welcome any overseas travelers during the pandemic, you know, but a lot of countries did that. But China did seem a bit more extreme. But as a result, you know, foreign tourism basically disappeared in China during the pandemic, and it's been really slow to return. I'm curious, do you have any insight on, one, why are they making this huge effort suddenly to bring back foreign tourists? You know, is it an economic thing? Or, again, you talked about this whole isolation. I mean, is there some symbolism here that China is trying to show that it's open for business again?
Well, first of all, you're right. I mean, you know, several countries kind of limited inbound arrivals from other parts of the world, but nowhere did it last 3 years. The U.S., in the U.S., it lasted about a year, and then they started to relax. Europe started to relax much earlier than China. So there was a time factor there that basically was much longer. Why now? Yeah, I think you've raised 2 points which make sense. I would add one, which is culture and the softer part of culture that, you know, people in general believe that tourism brings as a benefit to every country, soft power. And that I think is as much a reason as the others. Economically, obviously, quite real, you know, impact. If you go back to the same level of foreign tourism as before COVID, that obviously generates quite a boon, economically speaking. Showing the world that China is open for business, I mean, I think that's more of an issue of, you know, showing that to companies around the world.
Right.
And welcoming them, and you need more than this to convince manufacturing companies or service companies to come and invest in China.
Right.
The culture kind of like soft power angle is I think an important part of this.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see if anybody's convinced by this stuff. I have to say, just personally, from my perspective, if I'm choosing between China or Japan, say, for example, and I just hear all these nightmare stories about how difficult it is to pay for things in China, I mean, even if I think China's interesting, you know, culturally and it might be an interesting place to visit, I could totally see myself just saying, skip China this time, you know, just because it's too much trouble.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see if, you know, that whole impression changes. All right. Anyhow, let's wrap things up. So thanks, everybody, for joining us this week. In our next program, we'll look at a missed wealth management payment by Ping Trust. And we'll also look at automaker SAIC's sale of a majority stake in its India venture. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and rate us and share us on your favorite podcast app. Meantime, hope to see you all next week. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye, all. Thank you.